again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, power to the people. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, with the ill behavior. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, power to the people. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, with the ill behavior. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, power to the people. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, with the ill behavior. Back once again, will the renegade master. D4 damager, power to the people.
Okay, now we're going to revisit a subject. I know how you love to revisit a subject. James Fry owes his readers a million little refunds is the cute headline in USA Today, but I hate cute. I hate cute. I hate cute. As a reader of A Million Little Pieces, I am astounded by the advertisement from Doubleday, adding a publisher's note and author's note, unquote, and apologizing for, quote, confusion is insulting. That doesn't go far enough to address the damage done to the public. Million Little Problems, follow writer from Monday's issue. It appears to me that James Fry is a well-rehearsed liar, and the Doubleday publisher of the book is a willing partner. Well, that's kind of obvious. Anything short of issuing refunds for this bogus book is not acceptable. I will not buy another Doubleday book until it accepts responsibility for its culpability in this fraud. Bonnie Clowens, Phoenix. I agree with that person. I don't think it's right. Outright lie, but here this guy disagrees. Poetic License is the non-cute title. Thank you, U.S. Whore Today. I'm willing to defend James Fry's right to embellish the facts. That sounds dividend. I'll bet he's also willing to defend Bush and is embellishing the WND claims. I'm writing to defend James Fry's right to embellish the facts in his book A Million Little Pieces. Has the world never heard of Poetic License? Yeah, I think the world's heard of that. If fibbing, now he's just fibbing. I guess fibbing is like a venial sin where lying is a mortal sin. I'm way Catholic. If fibbing made this book more appealing to the masses, and it's likely to end up in the hands of addicts and their families, I say fib on. Oh, excellent. This is written by Susan Erling Martinez, who is a proponent of lying. She thinks lying is a good thing. You know she's a Bush voter. You just know she is. And sidebar, I've had some people write to me, Bard, I'm an addict. I love the book, you know. Fine. If the book helped you, fine. I got no problem with you and the book and getting help. I'm not anti-help. I'm anti-lie. I am the author of 4 self-help books with 2 addicts in my immediate family. I am intimately familiar with the The Million Little Pieces deepened my compassion for the addict and gave me hope that someday, maybe someday, my 2 favorite adults will be too. So to James Fry, I say bravo. Susan Erling Martinez, Adina, Minnesota. Well, I have a question for you, Susan Erling Martinez. What if I, Bart, had written that book? I've never been addicted to anything. Well, that's probably a lie, but never been addicted to hard drugs. So I have no idea what it's like to be caught up in that swirl of badness. But if I wrote a book talking about, oh, how horribly terrible, oh my God, I'm drowning in the sea of despair because I'm addicted to this, and then turns out I've never been addicted to anything, you would still say fib on? That just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I felt like he was a liar and a weasel, but the more I thought about it, I still loved the book. When I found out a lot of it had been made up, it didn't really change how I felt about the text, but it certainly changed how I felt about the author.
It's just very disappointing that the publishing house doesn't care. They're just counting their money, and readers don't care. It's gone to the top of the bestseller list. But somebody has to stand up for truth. This is not a close call.
By the way, the lady speaking there is Maureen Dowd. And you know, you always get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth from She Who Hates Everybody.
I would say that Oprah should kick James Fry's bony, lying, nonfiction butt out of the kingdom of Oprah.
Well, that's more from some of the journalists who have been following this controversy. So thank you all for your opinions. As I said earlier, this has been very embarrassing to me, and I deeply regret leaving the impression that I did from the Larry King show that the truth doesn't matter, because it does. Richard Cohen is a Washington Post columnist who wrote In the Case of James Fry, the liar whose memoir turns out to have a good deal of fiction alongside fact. He said, Oprah is not only wrong, but deluded. I was impressed with that. I was impressed with that because I thought sometimes criticism can be very helpful. So thank you very much. You were right. I was wrong. What do you want to say?
Well, I think where to go from here is to look at what happened. And I would say to the publishing industry, you guys have got to cut this out. You're not little shops anymore with two or three people working with quills. You're part of large corporations. Hire somebody for $25,000, $30,000 a year as a fact checker. A fact checker would have found out in a half an hour that some of this book didn't work because the book doesn't pass the smell test. How did this guy get on the airplane like this? I mean, I can't get on the airplane with a third piece of luggage. How did he get on like this? And so, you know, when something doesn't pass the smell test, you give it to a fact checker. Work it out. Somebody could have done what the smoking gun did. They could have done it. The publishers have to do it from here on in. There's a difference between truth and fiction. We find this out all the time. Now we're finding it out again. This was a betrayal of his readers. It was a betrayal of you. And it was a betrayal, I think, of Nan.
Why do you think it's a betrayal of his readers?
Because they were told this actually happened. They were told this is true. I talk to people about this, people who know about addiction, and they say the first step is truth. The first step is self-accountability, coming to terms. And, and I was sitting in the audience watching what was happening before, and I was thinking to myself about James, why is he doing this? Because he could have said, and I think a PR guy would have said, walk away. Just say you've talked and you said all you had to say, and that's it. Why go back and confront and confess? But if this is the first step towards truth, towards actually owning what happened to him and going on, then it's a healthy thing he did.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. And that's what you want to say to James? Because you wrote a lot about it.
Well, I'm not going to pardon what he did. I mean, it was a lie. I mean, I'm a journalist. I believe in truth. I believe that there is such a thing as truth, and I don't play this game. If a man says, I'd like you to meet my beautiful wife, and she's got teeth sticking out and all this kind of, you know that it's not his beautiful wife, but so what? That's what a memoir is. You know, you can get away with that. But a half an hour in jail is not 3 months in jail. And the difference between one and the other is the difference between a truth and a lie.
Okay, so just to straighten out the record, just to be sure there's no misunderstanding, my name is Bart, but I'm 32. I'm a really slim, super handsome guy, single man. All that folklore I invented about, you know, the wild and crazy drug abuser and the big gambler, that's all a bunch of hokum. I mean, come on, I'm trying to sell a product here. I haven't smoked pot, Christ, since high school. And I've never been to Las Vegas. I mean, please, I'm going to go to Vegas and give the mob a bunch of my money. Yeah, that's a good idea. And tequila, I haven't had tequila since high school either. What kind of idiot's going to spend $30, $40 on a bottle of tequila? You have to understand, this is a character that I've kind of developed over the years. And it's, I don't know, people buy it. So once I saw them buying it, I fed it a little bit and it kind of grew. And I don't know, I just would hate for someone to turn around someday and expose me. This character I invented, I mean, come on, it's a little license here. I just want to be sure everybody understands this is a gimmick to sell ads on the website. As you know, BartCup.com is highly profitable. Let's just be sure everyone knows this is all a bunch of hokum put together to sell the product. You can't say later on that I didn't tell you.
We need to talk. I was hoping to spare you from this, but I'm afraid Jack Bauer's forcing my hand. He's on his way here to meet with Mike Novick.
Bauer? Why?
He's going to accuse me of helping the terrorists acquire the nerve gas.
That's ridiculous.
No, sir. It's the truth.
What did you say?
Through a proxy, I leaked information to the terrorists about where the nerve gas was hidden. You have to understand, sir, this gas was never going to pose a threat to American lives.
Never pose a threat? People died in the airport. Hostages were killed.
We had hoped to limit the collateral damage.
Collateral damage? What are you thinking? This is an unspeakable crime.
You have to answer for this.
Mr. President, it's in your best interest to hear me out before you make that phone call.
What do you mean, my best interest?
Syntox gas is being smuggled out of the country by separatists who think they're going to use it against the Russians. However, that nerve gas will never reach Russian soil.
And you know this how?
We control the remote detonators on those gas canisters. As soon as they reach the terrorist base, we'll trigger the canisters by satellite and release the gas.
So everything that happened today was just to kill some terrorists?
No, the goal is to produce a smoking gun. Proof of the existence of weapons of mass destruction in Central Asia. This is unbelievable, Captain. It's necessary. It will finally give us a pretext to increase our military presence in the region, guaranteeing the flow of oil for the next generation.
How dare you? How dare you act without my consent? How dare you put this administration, this entire country, in jeopardy? You're a traitor.
No. No, Mr. President, I am a patriot, doing what needs to be done for the continued safety and well-being of this nation.
Oh my God. You gave the order to have David Palmer killed.
That was an unfortunate but necessary intervention. He found out too much and we had...
Walt! You're rationalizing murder, the murder of a president. You're going to contact these people and recover the nerve gas before it leaves the country.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why not?
I don't know where the nerve gas is. And the man I have working inside has gone dark. He's unreachable. Now, you'll let things play out as they are. Otherwise, your administration will be implicated. And your presidency will be destroyed. It's your choice, Mr. President.
Al Newhearth, or Newhearth, I don't care, I don't have time to look it up. Former publisher of the USA Today, and when he gave up his post, he said, hey, what, let me ramble on Fridays, and we'll call it a deal, and they said, fine. Sometimes he says things that are extra, extra stupid, like Bush is a good president, and sometimes he says things that are semi-smart, and we're going to go with the latter today. Sometimes it's more fun when he says something extra, extra stupid, like Bush is smart, because I can do a 20 minutes rebutting that. But here we got a headline, could bean counters have duped Ken Lay? He was the founder and boss when Enron stock soared to 90 a share, then plummeted to 26 cents, 1/360th of its former value. These sons of bitches, well, I'll get to it. And the company went bankrupt. This week he went on trial on a $60 billion plus fraud scandal. Ken Lay serves our traditional presumption, ready? Ken Lay deserves our traditional presumption of innocence, but his former chief financial officer, Andrew Fastow, has plea bargained guilt. Any claim by Lay that he didn't know Fastow and other financial executives were falsifying the balance sheets won't fly because of Lay's own economics expertise with these degrees. Bachelor's in Economics, 1964, with Phi Beta Kappa honors. Master's in Economics, Missouri, 1965. Doctorate in Economics, University of Houston, 1970. Corporate CEOs without economic expertise must rely on the honesty of their financial executives. That was the case for me as president, chairman, and CEO of Gannett, the country's largest newspaper. Fuck. The country's largest newspaper company. Al, I think I read better than you write. Can't you write with nuts and bolts? You write like Kerry talks. At Gannett, which owns USA Today, I was a generalist. I was a generalist. See? What fucking stupid writing? I'm a generalist. What the fuck is that? Who concentrated on getting more readers and buying or starting newspapers. Financial details were left to financial geniuses. During McCorkendale, Doug McCorkendale, Gannett's chief financial... God, why do I do this for a living? Doug McCorkendale, Gannett's chief financial officer during most of that time, probably could have bluffed me about the balance sheet, but he was as honest as he was smart. He became CEO and is now chairman. Difference between Lay and me, he didn't have to rely on other financial expert. He was one of them, so they couldn't dupe him. If Enron's books were cooked, the number one bean counter must take the blame. Now, how are you going to find fault with that? Like I said, now and then Al Newhart says something smart, and that's, well, maybe kind of rare. So if he says something smart, I figure it's my duty to point it out. Al, you're a nut. Now get out of here. But yeah, Ken Lay, he's got to go. Isn't it amazing that it took 4 years to bring this guy to trial? We don't know if he's going to be found guilty or not. Oh, you know another thing? Why can't people learn from the idiocy of Marcia Clark? Is that her name? The OJ prosecutor? You know, these people, they want to get home to their families. When you go 10,000 feet deep into the minutiae, lady, what are you, stupid? You're trying... You know, a trial lawyer is a lot like giving a speech. If you give a 7-hour speech, nobody cares. People have had children in the time it took you to start and stop this speech, and nobody cares. So why do prosecutors sometimes, they go into, you know, that OJ trial, what, it lasts a year? No wonder he was found innocent. These people wanted to go the fuck home. You can't keep people away from their families for a year because you're going on and on and on and on and on and on about 10 billion things that don't count. Marcia Clark was an idiot. I'm not saying OJ deserved to be found not guilty, but how stupid. It was surely, in retrospect, it couldn't have been a surprise, because when you bury the poor jury in endless minutiae, bullshit, crap that doesn't count. My God, again, like a speech. A speech is supposed to have 4 or 5 bullet points. Boom, boom, boom. Drive the point home. Thank you, good night. And you're out of there. And people think, hey, check that out. That was kind of sharp. If the prosecutors do that in the Enron trial, they'll come back probably with a guilty verdict. When there's $60 billion missing, Bart's Law number 2. Oh, did I make an accidental mistake and put $60 billion in my damn pocket? Oh, how could that have happened? I'm sorry. Yeah, you're sorry with the $60 billion. We don't buy it, Kenny. Too bad we don't hang sons of bitches like you anymore in this country. So another headline in the paper. U.S. Whore Today, best newspaper in my hand. This is from the Thursday, February 2 edition in the Money section. Oh, I love to read the Money, because as you know, I have a degree, I have a doctorate in economics. Did you know? Big headline, judge allows prosecutors to play tapes of Enron calls. And it would be so cool if I had a staff or a better memory, but you've all heard these calls. We had one trader talking to the other trader about, oh, did you hear about Grandma Millie? She's all upset that we rammed a $250 per megawatt charge up her ass. And the other guy laughs and said, oh yeah, it's so funny, I just love it. And then someone else said, oh, check out the wildfires that are consuming California. And the other one laughed and said, yeah, burn, baby, burn. This is great. I love it. So these sons of bitches who once made $500 million in one day by trading, think if I could send you an email and you could send me one back. And by doing that, we split $500 million. So each of us has $250 million, and guess what? We're not happy. We're oil men. We're Texas oil men, sons of bitches. So we're not happy stealing $250 million in one day each. That's not good enough for us. We want more, because we're Texas oil men, sons of bitches. That's what Enron did. They continued to gouge, and they continued to gouge, and then they gouged again, and then they gouged again. And of course, Bush said, hey, that's the market. What do you want me to do? That's the market. No, you lying son of a bitch. You knew they were doing that. You knew for a fact they were doing it. How are you supposed to call yourself an oil man and you don't know that they illegally made $500 million in one day? And of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Musclehead, he got right in there. He had private meetings with the Enron boys during all this. He knew what was going on. You don't accidentally make $250 million a day and say, oh, whoops, my bad. It doesn't work that way. So if you make a mistake and you make $250 million one day, you are a liar, and you're going to do it again and again and again. And that's what the Texas oil man sons of bitches do. You watch. I don't think Ken Lay's going to jail. Or if he does, they're going to, you know, tell you what, they're probably going to find him guilty and give him 8 years, and he'll do a year and a half, and they're going to find him $10 million. He stole $60 billion, and they're going to find him $10 million. So he's going to make $59 billion. And he's going to do, say, 4 years' time for it. So what's that? $16 billion a year to sit in prison. Now, with that kind of money, you know, you could show up in prison your first day and say, who are the three baddest sons of bitches in this prison? You, and you. Tell you what, I'll give you $1 million a year. Protect me, the three of you. $1 million for each of you. $3 million a year. Just protect me. You three guys, you just guard me 24-7. Nothing happens to me. $1 million a year for you guys. And if you're in prison for life, $1 million a year to your family. So each of you is going to get $4 million to protect me. So that leaves him with only $59 billion and change. James Cagney said it best. Never steal anything small. That's one of the BFEE mottos. You know, if you steal a candy bar and it's your third offense, you go to prison for life. If you're in California and you steal a pizza, your third offense, you go to prison for life. If you're Kenny Boy and you steal $60 billion and bankrupt 10,000 families, well, you get a slap on the wrist and protection for the couple of years you do in prison, earning $15 million a year. This is America under Bush, and we reelected this son of a bitch.
The minute I met Tony, I knew who that guy was. I don't know if I loved him in spite of it or because of it. I would go to my priest and I would cry and say how bad I felt, but that was bullshit. Because there are far bigger crooks than my husband.
I think you don't come here for the sandwiches. I think you come because you miss us.
Why don't you kill him? Put a bullet in his head.
Whatever happens, we gotta be taken care of.
People think you're weak. They see an opportunity.
Take your ultimatum and stick them in your ass.
Makes you wonder on heaven and hell.
My name is John Stewart. What a program we have for you this evening. Fred Barnes will be joining us to talk about his new book, Rebel in Chief. It's the story of President Bush's time in a motorcycle gang with Marlon Brando. Where they would circle innocent ladies and give them the book. With the Jack Abramoff scandal rocking Washington, the race is on. Which party can best exploit public disgust over corruption? The prize? Control of Congress in this year's midterm elections. Gentlemen, start your outrage.
I have been deeply disturbed by those who have broken the rules and of the House and in some instances have pleaded guilty to breaking the law.
I've never felt so distressed, so concerned, as I am today.
Ever? Pastor, it's deeply disturbed. Reed has never felt so distressed. And apparently, Senator Conrad Burns of Montana has the vapors.
Oh, Lord. Bribery. Oh, Lord, no. I can't believe it.
What about the White House? Their hands have to have a little Abramoff taint on them, no?
Give an update for us on Abramoff visits to the White House beyond the three parties that he attended.
Well, I indicated yesterday that I think there were some a few staff-level meetings, but no, I'm making sure that I have a thorough report back to you on that, and I'll get that to you hopefully very soon.
Okay. He's not sure how many staff-level meetings there were, but he's going to do a thorough report on any staff-level meetings Abramoff might have been, and he's going to get back to them very soon. So, okay, let's jump ahead 2 weeks later when the subject was brought up again.
I don't get into discussing staff-level meetings.
I'm sorry, can we play the first soundbite again? Let me just,
I'm making sure that I have a thorough report back to you on that.
And what did he say 2 weeks later?
We don't ever tend to get into those staff-level meetings. Again, we don't get into discussing staff-level meetings. We just don't get into discussing staff-level meetings. That's the way I would describe it.
Surely McClellan learned something about Abramoff and the president that he can share with us, no?
I think I previously indicated that he attended three Hanukkah receptions at the White House. It is actually only two Hanukkah receptions that he attended.
Yes, it was only two Hanukkah receptions. But the bribes miraculously lasted for eight whole days.
Now, for all his waffling,
that joke doesn't do well in New York. That joke doesn't do well. Now, for all his waffling, McClellan was perfectly clear about one simple fact concerning Jack Abramoff.
The president does not know him, nor does the president recall ever meeting him.
Doesn't know him! Never met him! Has no idea! Strong words! Fortunately, a picture is worth a thousand of those. And this week's Time magazine reports the existence of not one, but five pictures of Abramoff and Bush together. Pictures that will probably soon be circulated. Please let there not be nudity.
And one thing I don't do, I'm a voluptuous
woman, a big, beautiful woman. I don't date no fat men. If you fat, please stay out of my face. What two fat people gonna do? Have a World Wrestling Federation match? I like skinny men. Skinny men that smoke weed. So when they get the munchies, we on the same page. That's what I'm talking about. You get a nickel bag and I get a five piece. That's like being in heaven. And I'm 40 years old and I have an attraction to young men. I don't know why the older I get, my choices get younger. I just don't like it when men call me asking me stupid questions. Young boy gonna call me last week talking about what you got on. I said a big ass t-shirt with ketchup and mustard stains. You still coming over, player? And I be telling these young guys, this young guy gonna say to me, he said, you know, Roz, you're a nice looking girl. You just might need to work out. I said, let me tell you something, Faheem. I don't work out. I eat out and I take out. And if you don't like it, sit down. And we all know working people, we have hard working people. Get up every day and go to work. I used to have a job. I used to get up and go to work. I just don't like supervisors. Supervisors always asking you stupid questions. Supervisors talking about why you always late for work. I'm like, because it make the day go faster. The later I get here, the quicker they send. I had a job one time. I heard I was getting fired. Now, how you gonna hear you getting fired and sit there all day and work and wait for somebody to let you go? So the rumor got out, you getting fired today at 4:45. I said, oh, really? Round 12:15, my asthma started acting up real bad. Started having heart palpitations. Got up and went into the main lobby and passed out. They had to call 911. I went out on short-term disability for 16 weeks. My name is Roz. Y'all been a wonderful audience. Thank you. Thank you.
Sometimes you just got to wonder about the intelligence of some people who are supposed to be highly intelligent. And for one, I'm talking about airline pilots. If I was rich enough to afford a private jet, I would want a smart pilot instead of a stupid pilot. And if you're the family of the pilot, I'm sorry. It's just kind of common sense. We're going to talk about it real quick. Headline U.S. Whore today, Ebersol crash evidence. Ready? Ebersol crash evidence suggests ice. Minutes before his chartered jet crashed on takeoff at a Colorado airport in 2004, television exec Dick Ebersol saw chunks of slush sliding off the aircraft, according to documents released by investigators. The National Transportation Safety Board has not determined what caused the corporate jet to roll wildly after taking off and then slamming back into the ground. However, Ebersol's observation and other evidence released by the safety board suggests that dangerous ice on the wings could be to blame. That's a sad story. He lost a son in the wreck. And the older son, 21, pulled him out of it. Seems like his legs are broke or whatever. He had a bad time. The pilot and the co-pilot were both killed. Documents were released on the same day that Ebersol... That doesn't matter. Oh, okay, we have to read that one. Documents were released on the same day that Ebersol, chairman of NBC Sports, and his family appeared together on national television for the first time to recount the crash at the airport near Montrose, Colorado. Now, have you ever been to Colorado? I don't have a map in front of me, but using my IQ of 64, I remember that Montrose is very near Gunnison, Colorado. Gunnison, Colorado is the coldest place in the contiguous 48 United States. Trust me, it often gets 50 below at Gunnison, Colorado. And the date of this crash was November 2004. Now, trust me, November in Colorado is cold. It's not like Oklahoma. You know, here we are. It's February something, 3rd or 4th. It's another warm, sunny day in Oklahoma. It's going to hit 70 again. It's been 70 every effing day for like 60 days now, and I don't like that. I want a big-ass hard freeze to come in and kill every damn bug in this state at least once. God, can you hear me? But anyway, in Colorado, it gets so cold. Like I say, 50 below is cold in my book. I like it cold. I like it just deadly cold. But 50 below is a little too cold for old Bart. So if you're in an airplane taking off in November in Colorado, you'd think that maybe ice would be something you might want to keep an eye on. Hello? You know, it's one thing to be taking off from Atlanta in the summertime. No ice worries there. But when you're taking off in November in Colorado, and here the president of NBC Sports is sitting there and he's looking at chunks of slush coming off the wings, I don't know. It just seems like it might be a smart move to say, hey, excuse me, but how are we on ice? Should we maybe take a look at the wings? And it's a small airport. Apparently at the bigger airports, see in Oklahoma, I don't know, because we don't get ice in Oklahoma. But apparently at the big airports, Chicago, Boston, that kind of thing, they have de-icer trucks that come out and they squirt this antifreeze, whatever, on the wings just before it takes off. Now, see, that's a good idea. Seems like there ought to be a better way. Maybe they ought to put one of those heating things. You know, like sometimes if you go to some restaurant, they have these giant heaters above you that force down some heat. Maybe it'd be a good idea in some of the major airports in the cold cities to have the plane sit under these warming lamps, you know, like a French fry at McDonald's. Why not have the plane sit under some warming lamps for 2 minutes, 3 minutes before it takes off? I think that would be money well invested, especially if you're one of the people on the plane that's too icy to fly. But anyway, in closing, it's just a little aside. I saw that headline, what could be the cause of the crash in November in Colorado, a couple of miles from the coldest place in the whole country? My God, use your head, people.
You've been listening to Bart Cop Radio.